Om sahana vavatu, sahanao bhunaktu, sahavidyan karavavahai, tejasvi navadhitamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shantihi. Now I don't trust anything. Don't know if it's going to keep working or not. Anyway, welcome back, and welcome also to all the students attending these classes online. We continue. I'll turn this up just a little bit. We continue with our study of the current chapter of Uddhava Gita, and we know this chapter has several different topics. The current topic is bhakti, and we're coming towards the end of that topic. In previous classes, Sri Krishna has given Uddhava and given all of us this long list of various practices meant to cultivate bhakti. And just to summarize all of that in one sentence, bhakti doesn't come apne aap, as some of you would say, by itself. It takes effort to cultivate it. For some of you, that cultivation took place at home when you were young. But if it didn't take place at home when you were young, then it can take place now. As an adult, you can proceed with the various practices Sri Krishna has said, and anyone then can cultivate bhakti with the help of those practices. Now, we're coming to the end of this topic, and in this at the end here, he's going to talk about, we've already seen this verse 25, but in verse 25, he talked about Sri Krishna said that those practices have four results, four kinds of phala, the fruits of practice, and the four kinds of fruits of practice in the second half are dharma, and dharma in this context means an inclination for practice. Early on, you do it because you're supposed to, and later you do it because you love to. And that's how it works. Think of as a child. You know, mom said, do this. And you said, why should I do that? You just do it. So you did it because you were supposed to do it, and later you did it because you loved to. That's the idea. That one of the fruits of practice is that what was once done because you should do it is now done because you love to do it. You've discovered the meaning and purpose of it. The second fruit of these practices, he says, is jnanam. And jnanam, knowledge, remember we discussed earlier in this chapter, twofold, paroksha jnanam and aparoksha jnanam. Paroksha jnanam, indirect knowledge, scriptural knowledge, under just intellectual understanding, let us say, and the other, of course, is aparoksha jnanam, the immediate, direct, personal discovery of your true nature as Satchidananda, Atma. The first of those two kinds of knowledge is savairagyam, is accompanied by vairagya, dispassion. We had a long discussion on that. We won't return to it. And the fourth of those fruits is Aishwaryam, which I translated here as greatness, but Sri Krishna is going to give a very different definition when we resume. So we've already seen these verses. Oops. So we come now to the last verse of this section on bhakti, where Sri Krishna describes those four fruits with just brief detail, just one line for each. Dharmo mad bhakti, I'm going to get the right raga here first. Dharmo mad bhakti krit prokto, dharmo mad bhakti krit prokto, jnanam chaikatmya darshanam, jnanam chaikatmya darshanam, guneshva sango vairagyam, guneshva sango vairagyam. Aishwaryam, Aishwaryam Chani Madayaha, Aishwaryam Chani Madayaha. So one-line definitions of each of those four. First of all, dharma has many different meanings. If you look up the word in a dictionary, you'll find a dozen meanings. So here, dharma means, dharma is proktaha, said to be what? Mat bhakti krit, that which causes the arising of mad bhakti, devotion to me. Sri Krishna uses a pronoun. So that those practices which cultivate devotion to me, those practices which we saw in the prior two classes, those practices are called dharma. What about jnanam? Jnanam cha, then also jnanam, knowledge is ekatmya darshanam. It is the darshana, literally the seeing of the ekatmya, ekatmya, of the oneness of Atma. The seeing, literally the seeing of the oneness of Atma. We said before that this jnanam is both paroksha, indirect, and aparoksha, direct. The indirect knowledge, we can get two meanings out of darshana. Some of you know that, especially in vernacular languages, darshana is often used to mean philosophy, right? So in that sense of philosophy, ekatmya, the philosophical understanding of the oneness of Atma, is definitely paroksha, indirect knowledge. But then the literal meaning of darshana is seeing, direct experience. So by that second meaning of darshana, you have the other meaning of jnanam, which is aparoksha jnanam, immediate direct knowledge. Both of these can be considered jnanam, one of the fruits of practice. The next is vairagyam, which literally means dispassion. Dispassion towards what? Guneshu asangaha. Asangaha being unattached to guneshu. The world is trigunatmaka. The world is made of gunas. So to say dispassion towards gunas means towards the world. That's what it means in this context. To recognize that worldly, as you've heard in many classes, to recognize that worldly achievements will never culminate in perfect contentment. The last one is interesting. It's kind of we now say an outlier. If somebody or something doesn't fit in, we call it an outlier. Nice term. And here, the fourth one, Aishwaryam, is definitely an outlier because Sri Krishna defines it out, Aishwaryam cha anima adayaha. He defines Aishwaryam, greatness, also means power. Ishvara bhava, the status of being the master, the status of being in control. Are you in control of your body completely? In fact, many of us, we can't even control our weight. We can't control our diet. Can you control your sleep? That's another big issue for many, many people. And health, we do our best, but we recognize that we have limited control over our bodies. Well, it was believed in ancient times, pre-scientific times, that the performance of certain spiritual practices, especially yogic practices, can result in powers, unusual powers. And that's what he refers to as anima, etc. Anima means the ability to become tiny. Then you wouldn't have to diet. There's another, garima, the ability to be huge. There's another, to laghima, to be light. To be so light you can float in the air currents. And figuratively, you can fly. Or the opposite, to be so heavy, you become immovable. Other powers like being able to read other people's minds. A lot of these powers are called siddhis. You may know that. And many of these siddhis are actually described by Patanjali in his Yoga Sutras. And they were part of this ancient worldview, a pre-scientific worldview. Now, in modern times, we have zero evidence for the existence of any of these powers. Doesn't mean they couldn't exist or could never have existed. We don't know. What we know for sure is they don't seem to exist anywhere today. That we know for sure. So here's a good place to recognize the fact that we're reading an ancient scripture. So we need to understand the historical context. So 1,000 years ago and more, they accepted all of these powers as being a normal part of life. Today, with the benefit of our scientific wisdom, we know otherwise. Okay, enough said. And that brings us to the end of this topic. And with the next verse, Uddhava begins asking questions, a lot of questions. And I think Uddhava was kind of inspired by Sri Krishna. So Sri Krishna gave this list in four things, in four verses, in four lines, and maybe that inspired Uddhava to start asking questions, a lot of questions. So let's see those questions. Uddhava uvacha, Uddhava uvacha. What we'll do here, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 verses of questions. It'll be better to explain them when they're answered. I don't need to explain the questions. The questions are very simple. I'll save any comments I have for Sri Krishna's explanation. So let's just read through these five verses. And as always, in fact, more important now, as I'm chanting, read the translation and then repeat after me. These are Uddhava's questions. Yama kativedha prokto, yama kativedha prokto, niyamo varikarsana, niyamo varikarsana, kashama kodama krishna, kashama kodama krishna, katitikshadhrite prabho, katitikshadhrite prabho. You're following, you're reading the translation. Kim danam kim tapa shauryam, kim danam kim tapa shauryam, kim satyam ritamuchyate, kim satyam ritamuchyate, kastyaga kim dhanam cheshtam, kastyaga kim dhanam cheshtam, ko yajna kacha dakshina, ko yajna kacha dakshina. Oops. Pumsa kim svitbalam shriman, pumsa kinchit balam shriman, bhago labhascha keshava, bhago labhascha keshava, ka vidya hri paraka shrihi, ka vidya hri paraka shrihi, kim sukham dukham eva cha, kim sukham dukham eva cha, ka pandita kascha murkaha, ka pandita kascha murkaha, ka panta utpatashchakaha, ka panta utpatashchakaha, ka swargo naraka kaswit, kaswargo naraka kaswit, ko bandhuruta kim griham, ko griham, ka adhya ko daridrova, ka adra, I'm sorry, my mistake, ka adhya ko daridrova, ka adhya ko daridrova, kripana ka ka ishwaraha, kripana ka ka ishwaraha, etan prashnan mama bruhi, etan prashnan mama bruhi, vipari tanscha sat satpate, viparitansha satpate. Etan prashnan, these questions, mama bruhi. Please tell me the answer to these questions. Viparitansha, also the opposites. So some of the questions had an opposite included. Is it A or the opposite of A? Remember a math class? A and A not. Does that bring back any memories? If it doesn't, you're lucky. You didn't have to take those boring math classes. Good. So please tell me all this. Satpate, O master of reality, he addresses Lord Krishna. Uddhava, actually, if you count the individual questions in those five verses, I counted a total of 36 questions. So apparently he's been waiting a long time to ask questions, so it all comes out at once. And now Sri Krishna is going to, actually the rest of the chapter now, is devoted to answering these questions one at a time, and with some important insights that will come up. The first two questions, if you remember, were Yama and Niyama. Yama, we usually translate as prohibitions. Niyama, we usually translate as injunctions. Basically, don't do this and do that. They're do's, don'ts. We say do's and don'ts, but here it's in the reverse order, don'ts and do's. These terms, prohibition and injunction, are used because they're like religious do's and don'ts, not like what Mother says, when you eat, close your mouth when you're a child. So that's not a religious mandate. So that's why it's simply a do or don't. But here, these are all given in a religious context. Now, when rules are given in a religious context, we come to think of commandments. You know, from the Old Testament of the Bible, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, etc. And these do's and don'ts, especially the don'ts, the prohibitions, the yamas, which we're going to see in just a moment, come off sounding a little bit like commandments. And if you ask a Christian or Jewish religious professional, it says, you know, why shouldn't I steal? And the answer is, from a religious point of view, the answer is because you will make God upset. Huh? You can make God upset? If you can make God upset, who's more powerful? you or God? You get my point. So, you know, they often say, both, in fact, all three, Christian, Jews, and Muslims, will all say, you shouldn't displease God. These commandments are given so you can do God's will and not make God displeased. Like when mom says, chew with your mouth closed, when you do the right thing, then mom is happy. Remember, you're a child now. And when you fail to follow her instructions, mom becomes unhappy. So that interesting, the child has power over mom to make mom happy or unhappy. That's another problem we'll talk about another time. But it doesn't make sense in a religious context that you have the power to make God pleased or displeased. This is language that's commonly used, and it's confusing language. I'm sure a educated Christian, Jew, or Muslim would not say that you have the power to make God pleased or displeased. This is the language that's used commonly, and it's really confusing language. We should just set it aside. The Hindu approach to these yamas, by the way, the yamas begin with ahimsa, don't kill, and satyam, don't lie. So they sound like we're back to commandments. But here there's another difference, and an important difference. If you haven't heard this before, please listen very carefully. What is the reason that rules are given? So in the biblical tradition, you know, God is the lawgiver, so you have to conform to God's laws. It is really speaking for God's sake. You have to conform to God's laws. He has established the laws, and you have to conform. From a Hindu standpoint, it couldn't be more different, and that is that following these yamas and niyamas are not for God's sake, they're for your sake, and only for your sake. If you want to live a good life, follow these yamas and niyamas. If you want your life to be even more miserable and difficult than it even already is, then ignore these yamas and niyamas and just do whatever you want. You know this to be true in your own experience. You know someone, the term I've used, you know someone who has convenient ethics. What are convenient ethics? You're ethical when it's convenient. At other times, anything goes. You know people like that. Tell me, by and large, are they people who are happy and relaxed, or are they people who are always in distress and in some kind of trouble, in some kind of state of conflict? We create our own messes in life by failing to follow simple ethical principles. Those simple ethical principles are included in these yamas and niyamas. So, simply put, the following yamas and niyamas is not rules to be followed to please some creator or lawgiver, but rather they're for your own sakes. And to finish our introduction here, oh, I have an interesting point. Actually, there's another interpretation of the biblical commandments. And, you know, as I said, a more educated person will not say that you're trying to please God and you don't want to displease God. So maybe a more mature person won't say that. But what they will say, and what they have to say, is that if you don't follow God's laws, you're going to hell. No follower of the Bible will dispute that. And if you do follow all of God's laws, you can go to heaven. Well, you know, that's to say, if you don't follow God's laws, that's a threat, right? And if they say if you follow all of God's rules, you go to heaven, that's like promising you a payoff at the end of the road. These are inducements. This is why I think it's a popular Marxist point of view to say religion is established to keep people under control, and they'll use this example. So religion will threaten you with hell. Religion will promise you heaven so that you are controlled. Religion keeps you under control. That may be a Marxist point of view. Christians and others have a very different point of view. But all of this is completely foreign to the Hindu tradition, in which it's all for your sake. It's all to help you. The yamas prevent you from doing things which will make your life more miserable. The niyamas encourage you to do things which will help your life. And both in a worldly sense and in a spiritual sense. We'll see that, I think, out in a couple of verses. Last part of this introduction, then we'll see Sri Krishna's answers. Some of you know that in Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, Patanjali gives a system of 8 angas, 8 limbs, 8 steps of yoga, and the first two happen to be yama and niyama. And there, Patanjali gives five yamas and five niyamas. And just to underline my prior comment, why would Patanjali give these do's and don'ts? He's not threatening you with hell or telling you to go to heaven. He's saying, if you want to learn how to meditate, follow these yamas and niyamas. They're meant for your sake. Now, Patanjali gives five yamas, niyamas. Sri Krishna gives 12. 12 yamas, 12 niyamas. It's a little arbitrary. You can make a bad joke out of it, and that is Sri Krishna wants to do one up on Patanjali. That's just a joke. Don't take it seriously. So let's see Sri Krishna's response here. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Ahimsa Satyam Asteyam, Ahimsa Satyam Asteyam, Asango Hrira Sanjayaha, Asango Hrira Sanjayaha, Astikyam Brahmacharyam Cha, Astikyam Brahmacharyam Cha, Maunam Sthairyam Kshama Bhayam, Maunam Sthairyam Kshama Bhayam. These are the 12 yamas given by Sri Krishna. Yama again, prohibition. The first three, Satyam, Ahimsa, Satyam, and Asteyam, are exactly the same three that Patanjali gives. Ahimsa, don't cause harm. Please don't translate it as nonviolence. Doesn't mean nonviolence. Because the reason it can't mean nonviolence is this. If I hurt you in a nonviolent means, is that okay? I hurt you without resorting to violence. So it's not about violence. It's hurt. So ahimsa, don't cause harm. Don't cause harm to anyone. Don't cause harm to any living thing. Animals are living things. Plants are living things. This planet is considered a living thing. Don't cause harm. Next, satyam. Satyam means truth, but it means absence of asatyam, absence of lying. So don't lie. Don't. And again, a person with convenient ethics will be truthful when it's convenient. And again, you know the short-term outcome is good. You twist, you tell in American English, you know the expression, you tell a white lie. White lie is still a lie. It just means it's not a big thing, but you get in the habit of telling these little lies again and again and again and again, and all of your friends won't trust you anymore because you continually tell all these little lies. If you say, but I never told a big one, well, okay. Still, you lose credibility through telling all these little lies, and who does that hurt most? Your friends or you? When you lose credibility. That's the point. Even ahimsa, when you cause harm to another person, what is the law? Short term, you may have some benefit. Long term, it comes back on you, right? You cause some harm to someone one way or another, and according to the doctrine of karma, if it doesn't come back to you in this lifetime, it'll come back to you in a future lifetime. There are consequences for all of our actions, both short-term, both in immediate life and in future lives. You don't, what did they say? You can't get away with it. How's that sound? You know, some people say that to do a bank robbery and get away with it, which is the next one, asteyam. They get caught. They get caught. So there are consequences for all of your actions. He continues. Next line, asangaha. Again, these are the don'ts, the prohibitions. Don't have attachment. Attachment and love could not be more different. And too often, these two, the boundary between these two get blurred. Love crosses, let's be very clear. Love crosses a line when it turns into emotional manipulation, right? I love you, please do this. That's emotional manipulation. Or better yet, if you love me, you'll do this. That's not love. That's emotional manipulation. Why? Because you are attached to some goal. You want something. And because you want to do something, you take your love, nice modern word, you weaponize your own love. You turn love into a weapon of manipulation. So be very, very clear. What is the boundary of love? It crosses that barrier. It becomes manipulative, and that manipulation is driven by sangha, attachment, where you want something so badly that you're willing to weaponize your love, your relationships. That's the problem with sangha. Hrihi. Hrihi means modesty. And I'll go fairly quickly through these, and you're familiar with many of them. I'll go through them, and then we can see Sri Krishna's concluding statement. Hrihi here means modesty, but these are supposed to be yamas, right? So what does modesty mean? Don't be boastful. Don't be pride. Be free from pride, excessive self-interest, boasting, and all of that. And then asanchayaha potentially gives it as aparigraha, lack of grasping. Here it comes out a little differently. Asanchayaha, not accumulating. Tell me, at your home, do you have less than you need, exactly what you need, or more than you need? And the reference here is to the third one, where you end up deliberately or undeliberately accumulating more than you need. So asanchayaha, only take what you need and leave what you don't need for others, or give what you don't need to others. Astikyam. Again, these are supposed to be negative, don'ts. Astikyam, faith, means absence of doubt. Now, absence of doubt in a particular sense. In general, doubt is a good thing. Doubt you won't hear this in too many spiritual discourses or read it in spiritual books, but it's absolutely true in Advaita Vedanta. Doubt is a good thing. Doubt is your friend. It keeps you honest. It makes you ask questions. It makes you ascertain things very clearly, and it prevents one of the biggest obstacles in spiritual life, which is blind faith. Blind faith is an obstacle to spiritual growth. Absolutely, blind faith is an obstacle. So here, astikyam, doubt, means not in a general sense, but specifically with reference to scriptural teachings. It means to recognize that these teachings came from these ancient rishis who themselves had discovered these eternal truths, and it's recognizing the source of the material, having that understanding that these are the teachings of the ancient rishis, and having that kind of respect for these teachings. That's what's meant here by astikyam, absence of doubt. Next, brahmacharyam, absence of improper sexual conduct. Maunam, that's interesting. Don't speak. at all. It means you should, boy, life would be better if we'd follow this principle. Say something when you have something to say. I'm sorry to point out something you already know, but people talk for a lot of the wrong reasons, and people talk to gain emotional comfort, to gain attention, to appear big or important or whatever. There are a lot of unnecessary speaking goes on all the time. So speak when you have something to say. Stirium, firmness. Firmness here, again, these are the don'ts. So firmness would then mean absence of fickleness. Don't be fickle. Be clear about what you want. Make up your mind. And kshama, forgiveness. Forgiveness would be absence of complaining. Acceptance, tolerance. And forgiveness maybe is not the right translation here. But tolerance. So tolerance in a negative sense, don't complain. The example I gave before, actually when we were having all the technical problems today. One problem after another problem after another problem. Generally, people start complaining. Oh my gosh, I have so many problems. Sure. And you'll have more coming tomorrow and the next day and the next day. Get used to it. That's life. That's how it works. Fortunately, along with having so many problems, you are given the skills and powers to handle all those problems. As we saw, Vigna Karta and Vigna Harta. The laws of Ishvara are such that problems are inevitable in life, but you are empowered to handle all those problems. So why complain about them? And finally here, abhayam. Absence of fear, timidity, the readiness to do what is right, even when it's difficult. So many people want to take the easy way out. That's fear. Do what is right, even when it's difficult. That is abhayam. So these are the 12 yamas given by Sri Krishna. We'll see here briefly the 12 niyamas, the injunctions given by Sri Krishna. Shaucham tapas tapo homaha. Shaucham japas tapo homaha. Shraddha tityam mararchanam. Shraddha tityam mararchanam. Tirthatanam parartheha. Tirthatanam parartheha. Tushtiracharya sevanam. Tushtiracharya sevanam. The 12 niyamas, actually there are 11. I don't know why, but there are 11. Any problem with that? Yeah, there's supposed to be 12. Anyway, we'll make it into, we'll turn 11 into 12. We'll see how. Anyway, shaucham, and we're not simply, in fact, not so much purity of the body. That's easy. Take a bath each morning. Here, this one. And the kinds of impurities that we carry with us are hurt, guilt, frustration, irritation, all of this. These are mental impurities. You wouldn't carry impurities around on your body, yet we carry them around inside. What is that? You wouldn't dream of going out in public if you were physically dirty, if you were smelling, but no one hesitates if their feelings are, if their hearts are full of this, we say negativity, just anger and frustration and hurt and guilt and everything, no one thinks twice. That is mental impurity, impurity of the heart. It counts. And it counts every bit as much as physical purity. This is shaucham. Japaha. Japa, you know, the practice of japa, to repeat a mantra, but in general, just a kind of prayer. Then tapas, austerities. Austerity is like, actually, in this context, what a funny, I'm just making a funny thing. My mind goes in all funny directions. Here's an austerity: pay attention in a boring class. How's that? So this material is a little repetitive. You've heard all of this before, and it's very easy to get distracted, and Swami Dayananda is just, Swami Tadatmananda is just blah, 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 blah. It goes on and on and on. So tapas here means to make a concerted effort in something which is ultimately for your own good. But it is an effort. So yes, it may take a little effort to wade through all 12 of these yamas and niyamas. We make that effort, and we are blessed by that effort. That effort is tapas. Then tapas, then homaha. Homa refers to yajna, any kind of ritual in which you make sacrificial offerings into a fire, but in general, any kind of worship. Shraddha, you translate as faith, but it's, shraddha is one of the words that's so beautiful, and there's no English equivalent. It's so much more than faith. It's faith plus trust plus reverence plus giving the benefit of the doubt plus so much more. All of that is shraddha. Atithyam, hospitality. Someone shows up, you take care of them. Many of you are very good at doing that, I know that. Mararchanam, worship of me, Sri Krishna says. Then tirtha, atanam. Atanam, going, walking to a tirtha, to a place of pilgrimage, going on pilgrimage. Now, here we have that problem. There are only 11 here. We have to make 11 into 12. So we'll take the two separately. One is tirtha, going on pilgrimage, and atanam, wandering. Wandering is what a monk does. So the kind of wandering and collecting alms that a monk might do. This turns 11 into 12. Then para, artha, iha. You have to break the words apart. Para, artha, iha. Parartha, the highest goal. Iha, desire. Desire to reach the highest goal. Desire for liberation, for moksha. We often call that mumukshutva. That's what it means. Then, tushtihi, contentment. Acha, and finally, acharya, sevanam. Taking care of the teacher, taking care of your teacher. By the way, I have to say that our students here, you take care of me very well, and doesn't mean that you have to volunteer. Everyone donates, and in that way, you take care of the teacher. So either by donating, or by participating in some seva. All right, these are the 12 yamas, followed by 12 niyamas, and Sri Krishna concludes. Ete yama sa niyama, ete yama sa niyama, ubhayor dvadasha smritaha, ubhayor dvadasha smritaha, pumsam upasitastata, pumsam upasitastata, yatha kamam duhantihi, yatha kamam duhantihi. Ete, these yamaha, plural, these yamas, sa niyamaha, along with the niyamas, these ubhayoho, both of them are dvadashaha, are dvadasha, they are 12 smritaha, they are considered to be 12 in number. And pumsam, for people, when these 12 yamas and 12 niyamas, when they are upasitaha, followed. There are other meanings for that word as well, but when these 12 things you should avoid, when I say that, it makes me think, you know, I produce a lot of videos on YouTube, and one of the most popular titles of YouTube videos is 12 things that will make you happy. 12 things that you should avoid to be happy. That makes me think of a YouTube video title. So, upasitaha, these 12 things, when the 12 do's and 12 don'ts are followed, tata, O dear one, Sri Krishna addresses Uddhava, then following them, duhanti, they produce yatha kamam, they produce what you desire. They bring about what you desire. Notice he's not saying they necessarily lead to only to spiritual growth. Very importantly, I said, these are not just for spiritual growth. These are, if you want to have a happy life, if you want to be content in life, or very specifically, if you want to have a conflict-free life, those yamas are really, really important. Because whenever you violate these ethical norms, you trigger others. You push their buttons. And when others get their buttons pushed, what they do? What do they do? Tit for tat. They push your buttons. You create conflict for yourself in that way. So all of this is for your own sake. Don't look at these as religious mandates or like commandments. All of these are for your sake. Okay. And I think that's a good place to conclude our class today. Now, we've finished just, how many did I say? 36 questions? Those are two. And the others, like there are a lot of important spiritual teachings to come. So we'll see that in the coming classes. And then actually we're towards the end of this chapter. So we'll finish this off pretty quickly. Brief announcements. Tomorrow, Sunday, we have our class Upadesha Sahasri, wonderful Vedantic teachings of Sri Shankara at 10 o'clock, followed by satsang at 11. Come with your questions. We'll conclude with our prayers. Om Gananahan Tva Ganapatigam Avamahe Kavingavinam Hupamashravastamam Jeshtarajam Brahmanam Brahmanaspatahana Shrinvan Utibhisira Sadhanam Om Mahaganapataye Namaha Ishvaro Gurur Hatmeti Murti Bheda Vibhagine Vyoma Vadvyapta Dehaya Dakshina Murtaye Namaha Vasudeva Sutam Devam Kamsachanura Mardanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishnam Vande Jagat Gurum Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha Sarve Santu Niramayaha Sarve bhadrani pashyantu ma kashchid dukha bhag bhavet asato ma satgamaya tamaso ma jyotirgamaya mrityorma amritangamaya om shanti 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 om tat sat.